Kia ora and welcome to this episode of Better Off Red. My name's Pip and this is episode 127. It's the 15th in our Beyond a Joke series and I am talking with the amazing Joy Holly about the film Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. And this is kind of a starting point for us to talk about Joy's amazing collection of short fiction, Dream Girl, which came out earlier this year, might have even been last month. It's published by Te Herenga and Waka Press, and it's an incredible, incredible collection. And I really enjoyed talking with Holly about ideas of joy and even sort of elements of horror and how those two things kind of come together. And Bodies, Bodies, Bodies was just the perfect kind of way into this sort of conversation. Joy will introduce themselves and also Bodies, Bodies, Bodies as soon as I stop talking. But yeah, I just wanted to thank you again for listening. I realise we have been a little bit on and off time-wise. When I say we, I mean I. There's been a lot going on and yeah, I'm just very grateful and so incredibly grateful to Joy. This was just fantastic. I've been a really long time fan of Joy's work and it was incredible to talk to her about this new collection of short fiction. Thanks heaps.
Hi, it's Pip here. Just ducking in. I forgot to say in the introduction that I've got a copy of Joy's book to give away. It's signed. Thank you, Joy. And yeah, you could win this by just leaving a comment at Substack, or you can reply to the Twitter post, or you can reply to the Instagram post. So yeah, if you could do that by June 11th, and then I'll do a draw then. So yeah, thanks so much to Joy for this great book. And yeah, thanks heaps.
Hi, Joy.
Hi, Pip.
How are you going?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, we're meeting on a bit of a gloomy day.
It is very grey and wintry.
A little bit grey indeed. I was wondering if we could start by you introducing yourself in whatever way you want to do that.
Sure. I'm Joy Holly. I'm 25 and I've lived in Wellington for pretty much my whole life. And Te Herenga Waka University Press has just published my first book, Dream Girl, which is a collection of short stories. And they're about young queer women living in Wellington. There are lots of parties, lots of obsessive crushes, and also some spooky stuff like ghosts and vampires. Dream Girl is basically a product of my master's, which I did at the IML in 2020. And before that, I also published lots of poetry and some personal essays and a bunch of New Zealand journals and anthologies kind of over the past 6 years.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It is such a magnificent book. Like, I have just enjoyed, I reread it over the weekend and just, yeah, it's, I just cannot recommend it highly enough. It is such a fun and affecting and yeah, there's just, yeah, it's magnificent. It's magnificent.
Thank you, Pip.
I think it really shows what the short story can do in a lot of ways. It's really great. Now I asked you, first of all, I want to say that making a podcast is really hard. That's a bodies, bodies, bodies joke.
But yes, thank you. I did think that.
You have brought along this idea of bodies, bodies, bodies to talk about as something that has made you laugh. And I wonder if you'd just be willing to sort of introduce it as an object, kind of.
Sure. So Bodies, Bodies, Bodies is an A24 horror comedy that came out last year. And it's about a group of rich Gen Z friends that are spending a weekend at a remote mansion. But a hurricane hits and cuts off their power and their Wi-Fi and their phone service. And suddenly they're very isolated. And they decide to play this party game called Bodies, 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 where you turn off the lights and pretend to kill each other, basically. But all of a sudden someone's actually dead and they have to try to work out who killed him, and things just continue to go down from there, really.
Oh my god, it's a very funny movie.
It is.
I found it very scary, but I also found it very, very funny. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that. Like, it is kind of a genre crossy kind of thing, and I just wonder if you've got any thoughts about, the idea of placing comedy in horror. A lot of people that come on the podcast have talked about the similarity between kind of laughing and screaming, or laughing and being frightened. And I just wonder if you've got any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I feel like lots of my favourite horror movies have a comedy element, like Jennifer's Body.
Oh, so good.
And The Love Witch is another one that so I think good. Of. But I think I like in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies how it starts off quite comedic and then takes more of a horror turn. And by the end of the movie, you're like, oh, this is a lot darker than I thought it was. And then in like the last minutes of the movie, it flips again and you realise, your expectations of what the movie is going to be were maybe more right at the start.
I think that's so true. Like, I think what I thought was really great about it is it's incredibly intelligent in its humour. Like, it really, like, I don't want to sort of call it straight satire because I think that minimises what it does. But it's, man, the jokes are funny almost because they're true, kind of, eh?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like it's a very specific kind of niche of people that, we haven't maybe seen made fun of as much as others.
There's a line towards the end where someone says, your parents are upper middle class.
It's a classic.
This idea of money, I think, is so, is so alive in it as well. And I think part of the, part of what makes it interesting is some of that social structure that's there because of the money. And I just, like I say, over the weekend I was rereading your book and I just read that line where a character says they don't know what it's like to be poor, that they've got a lot of money in there. And I wonder, was money something you thought about when you wrote your book?
I feel like not as much as I maybe should have, but then kind of as I was getting into it, like as I kind of got into the middle of it, I guess I realized that money was something that was there without even really doing it intentionally. But maybe in like Heart-Shaped Bed, I was thinking about money a bit more. Definitely careless spending is throughout the book.
But it's so great because I do feel like you make really good use of jobs as well, like that constraint of having to be at work or not having to be at work or being at university or those kind of things. I think, it really gives an interesting kind of structure to the stories as well, which is really cool. Oh, it's just brilliant. I've jumped all over the place, of course, which is a bit annoying. I wonder, with Bodies, 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 when did you first hear about it? Like, how did you find yourself watching it for the first time?
Well, I had watched Shiver Baby, which Rachel Sennett stars in, and loved that movie. So then I think I heard about Bodies, Bodies, Bodies kind of after that. Mm. I had really wanted to watch it for quite a long time and had tried to watch it online with my sister, but it was like someone had filmed it in the cinema, very obviously. so we didn't do that. And then I was actually getting on a plane to Australia, my first time leaving the country after years of COVID. And it was on the plane. Awesome. So my girlfriend and I watched it on the plane, like with our screens synced up. And it was a good plane watch, actually.
I think it was a really good plane watch because it's kind of claustrophobic in a really good way, eh? Like it's kind of, And that's another really great thing about it is it kind of does all take place in one place, eh?
Yeah.
Which I think works well.
That's something I love about it. I think I like any movie or book or anything that has like people stuck in a, people who wouldn't usually interact, stuck together in a confined space, being forced to interact. I guess like The Breakfast Club is a classic example of that, or any kind of boarding school content as well. And I also like, how it's like a confined time as well. Like it takes place over one evening or one night, which is something I like in short stories too.
Yeah, and there's also that wonderful thing where the problem, I don't even know the right word for it, there's probably a craft word for it, but like the inciting incident, that's the word, like the inciting incident is kind of out of their control and it's kind of quite a melodramatic kind of thing, but it's just, it's so perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
God, that scene where, she arrives, well, I don't know, the person who is kind of like the what would you call it? Like they're kind of like the
outsider.
Like kind of the agitator and the outsider arrive together, and then the storm arrives with them, which is just so beautiful.
On a dark and stormy night.
Yes, it's so good. It's so good. It's so good. I wonder, like, there is something I think that's really cool about that movie as well, in that it sort of has this, what am I trying to say? Like, it's the way that those two things play off each other, like the profound and the joke. And I think it's that interesting thing that when you do force people into horrifying situations, sometimes some funny things happen. And yeah, I just wonder, I know this is a question that I had to explain because I didn't explain it very well, but I just wonder, like, in a lot of your stories, there's this great thing where there's this very beautiful, affecting, quite capital R romantic kind of thing happening, and then something out of the character's control will happen that maybe makes people sort of show their humanity a bit more, and, you know, like they fall over or have an accident or get locked in a cupboard or something like that. And I just wonder about that kind of thing in your writing.
Yes. Yeah, well, definitely a lot of the stories are about love or being in love, falling in love, which I do think is a sacred, beautiful thing. And I wanted that to, you know, be in there, and I wanted to get the magic of that in there. But I do also think that, at least for me, being in love can make me act like an idiot and do embarrassing things. And, like, yeah, love is also really funny a lot of the time. And I feel like often, like, the things that you kind of cling to do with love, but also other stuff probably, the things that, like, stick in your memory that you want to capture and save are, like, the surreal or unbelievable things, which are also often funny. You know, I don't know. I just feel like there's some kind of crossover there.
Yeah, I really love that idea because I think that, I don't know, like I always feel like I'm trying to look for signs often, you know, like if I've sort of got a crush on, you know, feelings for someone or something, I'm kind of looking for some external kind of metaphysical, magical kind of thing. And I think that the uncanny, you know, either a feeling of deja vu or, oh my God, that was weird how that happened, you know, and I think that those are some of the things that I look for. And I think, you know, I think there is, I don't know, that's what I really got from some of the stories was there's something really tricky about that moment where I should talk for myself, and you know, maybe I just recognize that it's not even there, but that moment where to be vulnerable or not to be vulnerable, you know, to show the true self or keep the mask on kind of thing. And it seems like I just think that so much of the energy of some of the stories is that moment where it's like, and that can be a little bit, you know, like almost comedy of manners kind of thing, like, oh, that it was the wrong time to be vulnerable or that kind of thing. But it always feels like it's not so mean on the characters is what I'm saying. But, yeah, I don't know.
I'm glad it's not mean on the characters.
No, it's definitely not mean on the characters. No, I think it's really nice. And I think that is something that works. So that I think sometimes I think people think, you know, that you know, characters are there to be mean to, but I think with this book it really proves that if you don't love them, it's not going to work in a lot of ways. I don't know.
Yeah, I get you. I feel like it's always surprising who loves what character and who finds what character mean as well. Like, you know, you might think one character is really annoying and then everyone else is like, no, the other character's really mean. They're nice.
Oh, my gosh. I so had that. Yeah, I've had that so many times. Like, I remember one short story that I put in. I was like, oh, do you think this character's too mean? And they were like, no, this character's the mean one. And that was a character I'd based on myself. I was like, oh, no, my behaviour. It wasn't that great. Whoopsie-daisy. Oh, there. When I think about short stories, I think sometimes they share some of the components of a joke, you know, like they have to make decisions about how much information to give at the start. They have to sort of set up the situation, and then generally there's kind of a climax, or there's a moment that the reader is, their expectations are kind of subverted or stuff like that. I just wonder, do you think having written such great short stories and having written poetry, I just wonder if you think there is any similarity between a joke, the structure of a joke and the structure of a short story.
I feel like endings is something that comes to mind, especially because they're both quite like a brief form compared to obviously a novel or something. And I feel like the ending or the punchline is often what's going to stick in people's minds because it is a brief form, which puts more pressure for the ending to be good.
Yeah. And like, do you have any, what do you think writing the stories taught you about endings? Because I think that I always find them hard to land. Like,
yeah, I really like endings. But I feel like it's the middle that I usually find the hardest. But yeah.
I remember a teacher saying that to me actually once. If you think there's a problem, go back three pages, because generally it's starting somewhere earlier, which I think is often the point with me, is like, I'm like, why is this ending not working? And it's just like, I haven't done the work somewhere back a little bit further, you know.
Yeah, like to justify the ending.
Yeah, exactly. In some of the stories there are some surprises that happen, and I just wonder, talking about that middle bit, like, it's interesting, I don't know, like, what do you think works about some of those surprises? Like, I'm thinking particularly there's one story, I'm trying to not give spoilers. Sometimes an accident may happen, or, you know, like, and we've been signposted, but, you know, like, I don't know, like, have you got any thoughts about accidents or, like, surprises or things that come out of the blue?
I think with surprises it's quite good to have other people who can read the stories for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so hard to tell yourself whether something's surprising or not. And, again, I think I got feedback both ways with that sometimes. I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but Blood Magic, when I got people to read that story for the first time, I was concerned that the vampiric nature of the story was too obvious too soon. I wanted it to have that feeling of like a build-up. And generally I think the feedback I got was quite positive, but someone was like, is this a vampire story? Which I think I'd only written half of it at that point, so it wasn't, yeah. But you just never know.
And I mean, that's the thing as well. I think sometimes, yeah, sometimes I rely on a surprise too much. Like, sometimes I'm just like, the only thing this has going for it is the surprise. And yeah, maybe I need to rely on that less. And like this, I think that's what is quite interesting. Like, I really loved what you said about that story, like, because it's not like it can come out of nowhere, right? Like, it does need. Otherwise, I don't know, a reader can feel a little bit.
Yeah, or I think like even if you know kind of what's going on early on in the story, it's like you still want that sense of going somewhere with it, you know? Like, yeah, even if you know what the twist is going to be, sometimes the build up to the twist is still satisfying.
Yeah, I really like that idea of motion. Like, I think that is one of the things with a short story is like, yeah, it kind of has to keep animated, eh? Like,
yeah.
There's not a lot of room.
No, you're so right. It's brutal.
It really is brutal. Like, I think one of the things that you do extremely well in here is, as I said before, that moment where you're not sure if, like, I feel like this is all psychoanalysis on me, but like, like, where you're not sure if someone likes you or not. Uh-huh. And I just wonder, is that an accurate way to describe some of the stories? Like, is that an interesting moment? I don't know, what's electric about writing about love?
Yeah, well, I think definitely that was where a drive for like myself came from to write a lot of the stories. And I do find not knowing if someone likes me or wanting someone to love me is like a good force to write. Just because I'll have like manic built up energy and you have nowhere to put it. But, you know, sometimes writing or creating something is a good place for that energy to go. And I do also think that it is a very good source of energy and drive for a character. And that is, I guess, where like a lot of the protagonist's kind of drive is coming from in the stories. Often what they want is to know if someone likes them.
Yeah.
Or to make that person like them back as yeah. well. It's not just that, yeah.
Because I do think that, I don't know, like I think I love what you say about energy there, because I think that one of the really interesting things about those moments in our lives is that two things are true at the same time almost. You know what I mean? Mm. Like they almost feel like it's this weird like universe splitting kind of moment where it's and I think that it's a natural thing. I don't know, like I can only speak for myself, but I think that that is where I am telling stories to myself in those moments. You know, I'm like, oh, this could happen and that could happen and what information am I getting in, and you know, all that feels like writing work, if you know what I mean. Like that feels like fiction work.
Yeah, yeah, I get you.
Like yes. observation and yeah, like possibilities and yeah, I don't know. I just think it's a very, very amazing thing to look at. One of the things that I really like in here as well, and I don't know how well I describe it, but like there is this really interesting, I think I use the word leakage of time, but there are sort of different time frames sitting next to each other, which I think works extremely well because you almost revisit sometimes and invent them in a new way. Like there's a couple of stories in particular that I was interested in reading in the acknowledgements have actually come from historical pieces of you know, writing and stuff. And I just wonder what works for you, or was that more a, you know, sort of subconscious thing, or is it just a result of the world that we live in? Or yeah, I don't know. Have you got any thoughts about different times and different objects from times sitting in uh-huh. the same place?
Yeah, I think since I was quite young, and definitely when I was a teenager, would go into quite deep like research spirals about particular times or events in history. And I have written kind of fiction or creative things like that about that are set in the past, I guess, like before I wrote this book. So I didn't really go into it intending to do that again, but I'm not surprised that I ended up doing that.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted to write about Erskine College and that I wanted to research Erskine College for the book. And then I ended up writing about Phyllis Simmons, who was famously murdered and buried in the fill of the Mount Victoria Tunnel. I think that was the first kind of historical writing that I did for this. And then once I had Erskine College, once I had that, I was like, oh, I should probably write about something else as well. Because I'm a big threes person.
Yep.
I want threes. And I'd already done a lot of research about the Mason Garb report and kind of connected events and that time in the 50s and around teenagers. And I felt like I didn't really feel satisfied with like things I'd produced from that research. So yeah, I wanted to write a story specifically about that time. I also had done like some stuff with the old girls at my college when I was a teenager and had all these notes from talking to them that I'd never used for anything. So I decided to make that story kind of loosely based around my old school. So I had just a place and time to center it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I wonder, like, I don't know, like, I think sometimes people might think that fiction, like, I don't know, like, I'm just really interested. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about what has to be done to this research to make it fiction, if you know what I mean. Like, what imaginative work did you need to do on the facts, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of my writing kind of starts with like a list of images or like just ideas that I want to thread together. So in a way it wasn't that different to my usual writing process because I would just have a list of facts and images and things that I'd picked up from research that I wanted to thread into a narrative. Yeah.
That sounds amazing though. Like, I mean, what I really love about that is the idea that, wherever that list comes from, you know what I mean? Like whether it's in lived experience
or
watching someone else's movie or something like that, it's a really, really nice idea. It's a really nice idea.
I could talk a bit more also about Girls in the Tunnel because that actually, this kind of form of that story changed quite a lot. The first version that I wrote, which actually is on Turbine, I was like very unhappy with. I just felt like it wasn't right. And then I guess I was thinking more about how I had come across like the Phyllis Simmons story and was just thinking about how, you know, the first I'd ever heard about it was basically a rumor like that this girl was murdered and buried in the tunnel, which just sounded like an urban legend,
you know,
it didn't sound like something that could be real. And so for so many years, I just thought it was. And then when I finally actually Googled it and realized that it was true and how much information there was about it and how horrific it was, it's like one of those stories where the more you read, the more you're like, this could not get any worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I realized that I wanted to capture like that sense of kind of discovery in the story. So then I rewrote the story to start with year nines at a high school talking about this murder as if it was a legend or a myth, and then building up to year 13, I just like split it into five basically, where the girls like know everything there is to know about the murder and have, you know, real feelings about it.
Yeah, I think the structure of it is so incredible. Like I've read it a couple of times now, and you describing it, like those things, like it's kind of like those aha moments. Like I'm thinking, oh yeah, that's exactly what it does. And it's just so incredibly clever because it moves without this, it doesn't feel self-conscious, if you know what I mean. Like it just seems really interesting. And like there, I don't know, like it's interesting the place of men in the rest of the in the rest of the book and the place of men there. I think what I really love about it is that I hope this is the right thing to say, but men don't seem like a huge threat in the rest of the book. Mm. And then there's kind of this, and it's really nice because you can read it in a way that it sort of reclaims Phyllis as a full human being, not the victim of this one act. And I just thought that was incredibly well done. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I like the way men are dealt with in this book.
Thank you. There's not very many of them.
I love it. I love it. And when they're there, they're often, they're often there for purposes, eh? Like they buy heart-shaped beds. I like that.
Yeah.
That was my favourite bit. I really liked that a lot. This book also, like speaking of the heart-shaped bed, this book is really full of objects. And I just wonder, they seem to work extremely well for pointing the reader to things that are said and unsaid and unseen. So sometimes an object, I'm just thinking of the fruit, also like it's just you're very in control of the objects in the story. And I just wonder, like, do you have any advice to writers around using concrete objects in short story?
That's a hard one because I feel like of all the writing things, objects, well, writing about objects is something that's like very automatic for me. Like I don't even really think about it. Whereas other things I have to struggle over much harder.
Yeah.
I really love objects and have a lot of them in my life. And a lot of the objects that feature in the book are straight out of my bedroom. But I think being aware of like the space that you're imagining scenes taking place in, like I always have a very clear image of, you know, the room or the field or the bar a scene is taking place in. Like I might have a more shifty image of the character or something, but I feel like I always have a pretty clear vision of like the space around the characters. So I guess just trying to picture that in your mind, even if you're literally just stealing it from something in real life, which you probably will do.
Yeah.
And then just, yeah, I guess kind of like imagining looking around and what you see in that space is how I probably get most of the objects in there. And just being specific, the classic writing advice. That's my thoughts.
I really like that because I also think I also feel like you're very what's the word I was gonna say? It must be weird when people talk about your writing, sorry. But like you're very light on like touch, taste, all those sorts of things, but they're always perfect, if you know what I mean. Like there's one where I think it's the noise of a mandarin like being eaten or torn or something. Mm. And like it's there's a very thingy nature to the, you know, it's always the right descriptor that's used, if you know what I mean. Like,
I'm glad.
Yeah, and I think it's what you're saying. I think it's the specifics, and I think, yeah, the observation is just so well done. Like it's very transformative. I really, really like it. The other thing, the book also contains really well-drawn characters. And yeah, I just wonder what you discovered about writing people when you were writing these stories.
See, I feel like characters are one of the things that I actually still find really hard.
Yeah.
And I know some people are like, don't start writing until you can hear the character's voice in your head. I'm like, that's never happened for me.
Yeah.
And if I can hear their voice, it's because I'm basing it on someone's actual voice.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I still have a lot to learn about writing character, to be honest. Emily Perkins, she was my supervisor for the MA. I can't remember the exact quote, and I also can't remember who had originally said it. I feel like it was Grace Paley, but I could be wrong. But it was something like, give all of your characters the freedom of the open page, something along those lines. And I think that's it's hard advice to follow, but it does make a story so much better if you can do that, even with the most minor characters. So I feel like that's something I'm like constantly aiming for, not necessarily achieving, but trying.
I think you really achieve it. Like I'm thinking particularly there are times in the book and the stories where you're managing quite a few characters in one room or one place. And I just thought, whoa, this is so good, because not once am I thinking, oh, which one were they? You know, like, I don't know, like it's incredibly, yeah, like, I don't know, like I'd be interested, I didn't prep you for this, so don't answer it, but like I'd be really interested if you've got any advice about writing those kind of, I'm thinking of them as party scenes or dinner scenes, you know, where there are multiple rooms, multiple people moving around rooms. What do you think works in those situations?
I feel like that honestly might come back to what I was saying before with kind of like spatial awareness with writing. Yeah, I know like some people say that they often feel like their characters are just like staring at a wall, but I never feel that. Like I always feel like my characters are in a space and there's things around them and there's other people around them. And yeah, I guess like physical objects and things like that can also come in handy, like using clothes and things like that to kind of ground someone in a scene.
Yeah, I was just thinking, especially in the car, like that, like no one wants to sit in the middle seat, and you're instantly like, right, that person's in the middle seat, you know, because like, there was the argy bargy about who sits in the seat. And then of course, in your brilliant way, one thing isn't doing one thing, you know, like while that's happening, you're also like, oh, there's an interesting power play, and you know, this, yeah, I don't know, like it's just so. And I think in the book you might be right. Like there's, it is often what someone's wearing or what they're carrying or, yeah, that helps me out, you know, like how much is in their glass, that kind of thing, which I think is really, really good. I was wondering if you'd be willing to talk about how you wrote the stories. Like, as you said, like they sort of started when you were doing the IIML, the MA, so it was like, yeah, that was – I don't even know, but most people sort of have a little bit more time while they're doing that. And then, yeah, that ended and you kept writing these amazing stories. And I just wonder, yeah, would you be willing to talk a little bit about the how of writing them?
Sure, yeah. Well, I wrote, how many stories are there? I think there's, I can't even remember now. I think there's like maybe, anyway, I'm not going to guess, but I wrote like around 15 stories in the MA. And then it took me like 2 years to write another two stories after the MA. I was very burnt out, though I don't think I'd admit that to myself at the time. Mm-hmm. And also just really wanted to like get out there and live life rather than being inside writing. So it was a very like slow and difficult process getting those last stories. But I think that did also give me time to like actually look back over the rest of the collection and think about what I wanted it to be and do and edit it well. But yeah, I think I wrote the stories mostly kind of one by one through the EMA. I started with more kind of crush stories that were more grounded in reality. And then as the year went on, got leaned more towards, I guess, like the spooky stuff and some of the historical stuff. Yeah, got a bit more freaky.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the two stories that I wrote after the MA are the Moral Delinquency one and Blood Magic, the vampire story. Yeah, but often I would have, like, I would be doing edits on one story, I'd be writing the first draft of another story, I might be doing, like, a second round of edits on another story, which was quite good because it meant I could, if I got really sick of one story, I would, like, have something else that I could go do instead, which wasn't the case for most of the people in my MA class who were doing novels.
I also wrote short stories and I really loved it.
Oh, like it's like you feel like you're having such a great time compared to everyone else.
Everyone else is like, oh my God. And I just really loved it because there was always that fresh start. Just love, and I think that is a lot of the joy of reading the book is that you just don't know what the next one, you know, like you turn the page and you're like, okay, where am I now? Take me anywhere. You know, like it's really, really great. Do you think variety is important in a short story collection?
I feel like, yes and no. Like if you like what a short story is doing, you probably do just want a whole bunch more kind of like that.
Yeah.
I was quite conscious of what I wanted this collection to be, and I was quite stubborn about I wasn't going to just, like, write a story that was really different just for the sake of having something different in there. But I guess that was also kind of where some of the historical stories came from, was just wanting to, like, contextualize some of the other stories. Especially, I guess, yeah, I wanted it to be a very, like, fun and positive expression of, like, being a young queer woman, because that's the experience I've had and I know I'm very lucky to have had that. So I wanted the book to be that. But then I think where some of that historical stuff came in was maybe, like, contextualizing that I know that I'm lucky to have that, to be able to write that, and that I know, you know, just, you know, showing that that hasn't been the case for long, really. Like, very not long ago in the city with girls very much like me, they would have had a much harder time doing that.
Yeah. And I think this is, again, one of the real successes of the book is that it does feel like it comes from the same universe. Like, no matter where you go, you feel like, oh, yep, this is part of it. And I think that cohesiveness was really remarkable for me. You know, like I read a lot of collections and, you know, often it is kind of like, whoa, 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 you know, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. And what I really loved about this is that it just felt like the joy was just compounding, you know, like by the end of the book, I was just like, yay, you know, like it just felt really beautiful and not in a simplified way, you know, it just felt really magnificent. Like, yeah. And I think that is the thing, you know, like what you're saying is not something that I would have necessarily picked out, but I think that, yeah, it definitely just works together so well. How did you go, and this is a really boring story, boring question, but I'm always obsessed with it. How did you go about working out the order of the stories? Like, did they seem to fall into a natural order, or was it more, like, were there some that were really tricky to kind of, you know, get in the right order?
I think they, not entirely, but they are in, like, they kind of match the order of that I wrote them in. Not entirely, but, like, Mission Strawberry, Fruit and Rat Trap were the first three stories that I wrote, and they were all in that first section.
Yeah,
I was conscious because there are some, like, repeating themes. Like, there are schoolgirl stories.
Yeah.
There are crush stories. There are kind of list stories. Mm-hmm. There are historical stories. So I was trying to space those out. And also just things like there are stories that are addressed to a you, and there are stories in first person, stories in third person. So, yeah, some of those things took a bit of spacing out. But yeah, I wanted it, I guess I wanted it to start with that kind of obsessive crush, anything for love mode, and then slowly not grow entirely out of that, but grow from that. And I liked having the kind of spooky, darker stuff towards the end as well. And I guess maybe a little bit of like disillusionment with crushes towards the end.
Yeah, it really is. Like I say, I know there's a temptation to not read these in order, but I reckon everyone should read them in order. Like they just, like I say, it's just this argument that grows and shifts and changes. And yeah, it's just fantastic. Just going back to sort of bodies. What do you, and again, I haven't prepped you for this question, so totally don't answer it. But what do you think is the appeal of that darker side? Like when you're writing it, I know what appeals to me about it, but when I'm writing it, but I wonder like what's fun about it for you?
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about that like Quentin Tarantino interview where they're asking him like why he has so much violence. And he's like, because it's fun, Jan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like how I feel about spooky stuff. I don't even know how to really, you know, explain it, but yeah, and I found like throughout the MA, like as I kind of said before, I like really started off writing very like crush stories that were like very pretty close to reality and like were probably closer to my own experience as well, and then throughout the year became like more and more obsessed with having ghosts and supernatural elements, and then since I've finished this book I feel like I'm just like going more and more in that direction. I just feel like once you start having a bit of magic in there, it's like, why would you not?
Oh my gosh, I so relate. Yeah, it is. I totally agree. Like, I mean, I always thought that if I started to bring in those kind of mystical and magical kind of elements that there would be less constraint. But what I really love is that magic can actually, you know, philosophically it becomes so interesting. You know,
also, like, yeah, I feel like it's like when you think you're stuck, there's like so many tropes that you can go back to and they're actually all just so much fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so juicy and nostalgic as well. Like they just remind me of the stories that I guess that like made me fall in love with storytelling as a child as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I don't know, like, yeah, I often think about that as well, you know, like it just, yeah, I didn't do a lot of like reading as a small child, like as a sort of like when I could read myself, I didn't read a lot, but I just remember those really cool, scary kind of what do you call them, fairy tales and stuff like that. I mean, there's something really beautiful about that, and like the reclaiming some of those tropes and then twisting them a bit is quite fun.
Yeah, so much potential.
Really love it. So are you a reader who likes to read, a writer who likes to read?
I'd be so concerned if someone said no to that question. Like, have you ever had someone say no?
I can take it or leave it.
Yes, I feel like a lot of what I read is writing from Aotearoa just because I'm nosy and like to know what everyone's up to and what everyone's into, and I'm invested in the writing that's by people that I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, people who, I don't know, are experiencing the same things or living in the same place as me, even just that. So yeah, very excited for your new book, and I'm excited for Emily's new book. Oh, I'm excited for Hannah Mettner's new book. There's so many new books coming out. It's very, very exciting.
And I really like, I really love reading like poetry when I'm writing fiction. Like, I don't know, there's something really nice about it. And it sounds like you read right across genre.
Well, so many poets in Wellington.
So many poets.
You have to read poetry. Yeah, that's good. That is really great. I feel like, I don't know, especially just for vibes sometimes. Like, you just want to read something vibey. Poetry was good at that.
And they're also good at that really condensed sentence as well. Like sometimes I'm like blah, 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 blah. And then I see like this one perfect sentence which captures like something that's taken me 4 pages to write. I'm just like, damn.
Yeah. So poetry is really hard. Like trying to go back to writing poetry after writing fiction, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can do this anymore. It's really hard.
It's freaky too, because like you're one of my favorite poets as well. Like I do hear what you're saying though. Like I started out writing poetry, and I mean I still write it, but I would never show anyone it. Like it's really,
Yeah, I wonder if you... Oh, my God, do you think fiction ruins you for poetry?
Maybe. I don't know. God. Maybe I'll go back. We'll see. But I love fiction, so...
Yeah, I'm kind of in love. What do you love about fiction? I really love fiction too.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I think fiction is like the first... It's like the writing that I started with, you know? Like, I was always writing stories and books and just like walking around outside, like talking to myself, telling stories when I was... young, and that's like what made me fall in love with writing. What do I like about fiction? I think the thing I like the most is being able to like create a world, you know, and even just in a short story, and even if the world is really close to your own world, it's that feeling of once you've kind of done enough, when you're like going back to work on a story, you feel like you're going into this world, and it just feels so nice to be inside it and look around and change things and yeah, right from inside, like a little bubble.
Oh my God, you've described it so well. That just describes the feeling so well. Like that thing where you go back and you're like, oh yeah, I'm here. And it is almost like you open the file and it's like opening a door. It's coming good.
But that's hard before you're there.
Oh yeah.
Trying to make it happen. Yeah. When you haven't got it, that's hard.
Where are you, world? Yeah, yeah. It's super hard. It's super hard. So now that the collection is like one thing, do you find that are you someone who will write notes and, you know, like things that necessarily aren't a story and then make a story, or does the start of a story come and you think, right, I'm gonna write a story about that?
It depends, but definitely a big notes person.
Yeah.
Lots of lists and just like random images all put together in a document. But I don't know, some stories do come pretty like, I don't know, not fully formed, but I'll have like a very solid idea of what they're going to be. And those ones feel easier, but sometimes they're harder in the end.
Yeah, it's so true. And just that thing you were saying before about living life, like, yeah, it's often while I'm out doing other things that I'll think, oh, it's interesting how, you know, and then that'll start me off on a story. I really like it. I'm good. Finally, I've got a question that I ask everyone, and I still, after asking everyone this for about 3 years, I still have trouble finding the right way to ask it. But I'm just wondering about what keeps you going as a writer. Like, what are the things that you, well, not even what you need, but I just wonder what keeps you going. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I work in a library, mm-hmm. which doesn't make much money, but that's kind of a sacrifice that I'm like willing to make for having a job that I can just like forget about once I'm home. Yeah. And also it's a job where you can do a lot of thinking about other stuff throughout the day, really. Mm. So like a lot of my kind of like story brain happens at work. I don't know how people write when they have really draining jobs well full time.
Yes,
that's impossible.
Yeah.
But people do it. But I don't know if I could.
Yeah.
So I guess that's one thing. I do think community and knowing other writers is a must for me. And there's basically nothing as inspiring as going to readings and launches and hearing people read their work, and also feedbacking other people's work, I find, is another big one, because it like gets my brain into that writing headspace without like the pressure of sitting down to write something of your own. But I think it like uses the same muscles and like makes me excited to write again when I read other people's work, thinking about like how it could be better or critiquing it, or even just being like, damn, this is incredible. How did you do this?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good way of describing it, because I do think like it's such a privilege when someone asks you what you think of something. And like, it is a really, I think you've expressed so many things that I didn't realize there were words for, but yeah, I think that's what it is. It's the fact that you've got ready-made writing and then you can move into that space of like being inside the engine of it and saying, oh, this could use this could use some more oil and this could use that. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. And like, I mean, that is something. Like, it feels like, I don't know, I was just thinking about this the other day and I don't know if it's true, but it feels like because we've just gone through a time of everyone being stuck here, it feels like community has got strong. And what's really cool is that as people are going overseas, it feels like we're not losing people, if you know what I mean. Like losing, like there's still the ability to keep those writing communities up while people are overseas. Maybe
I hope so. Yeah. But I'm glad there's still so many writers.
Yeah.
In Wellington. And yeah. I feel like the Wellington writing community has been pretty strong even before COVID.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And yeah, so many great people. Thank you so much, Joy.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Such a lovely conversation. And I really love your book. And yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I'm very happy to have done it. It was so fun.
Yay. Thank you.